Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Have you been seriously injured? Mama Justice is here for you. Our medical team partners with top-notch doctors, surgeons, therapists, and urologists, ensuring a comprehensive recovery journey. If you've been injured, call Mama Justice today. We're here for you.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the very, very end of yet another wonderful month here on the Garden Mama Show. Nothing is generous. New knowledge is a valuable commodity. The more truth we have to work with, the richer we are. Thank you very much, Mr. Vonnegut. Guess what? That's what we're doing around here. This is actually what's going on in your garden. Who knows? No one knows at the moment whether it's going to stay cold, get warmer, go this or that. My goodness, if I was a meteorologist, I would not be sleeping at night. But at my house today in central Mississippi, Zone 8, it was a whopping 28 degrees for the first time since March. Lance, I know you have on all your clothes. Good morning.
I have on a layer. I went with the basic Eskimo package. And my warmest pants. I will tell you, they're the best things I've ever bought. And if anyone ever wants to know what they are, DM me, you know, or whatever
they
do.
They're exceedingly
camo.
Whatever
the kids do these days. But no, they have a Sherpa lining.
That's the question.
And they have some kind of wind blocker exterior. They're like sweatpants almost, but I've worn these for since the weather tipped into the 30s, and it is nice. Mm-hmm. And then I have a Sitka, a hoodie, and it's probably the warmest hoodie I've ever had. So I can go pretty light, with the layers of these two, but it's not much for style.
I can break out in a sweat thinking of wearing all that level of warmth at one time. But anyway.
And it's just two layers. It's my top, And,
yeah.
But, I mean, it's, like I said, normally I'd have to.
He still looks like the Michelin guy, puffed up.
All puffed up.
The Stay Puft Marshmallow. Anyway, that's the good news. Now, going to be this way where I am here in Zone 8 several more nights. And then it's going to be back in the 40s at night again, so. Who knows what happens after that?
It's going to be cold. It did get to frost level last night, 32. Mm-hmm. So was it going to be around 6 hours? How does that affect plants that were not covered?
Well,
that needed.
It depends on the plant. Pansies, snapdragons, things that are intended to be growing in the winter, parsley, all that. They don't care. They're like, okay, fine, let's go. But if you have tropical plants that are still outdoors, they're probably going to at least get nipped, if not frozen. If we get 3 or 4 nights in a row, wherever you happen to live, that are below 32, you can wave goodbye to your banana plants. You can watch them keel over as their tissue. What happens, of course, to them is, like so many other things, it's just more graphic with something that's that fibrous. It has water in it. The water freezes, and then the water tries to thaw out, and then the water freezes again, and then it tries to thaw out, and the cell walls rupture, and the whole thing collapses. It'll happen to your elephant ears. It'll happen, there's several. Sometimes, some years, plants like that just sort of turn yellow and die down naturally and sweetly. But other times, when we have this back-and-forth kind of weather, which is most often in Zone 8, it's what keeps it interesting. The best part about that is it doesn't last for long, and if you go ahead and clean it up, then you will be ahead of the game, because if it doesn't do it now, it's going to do it in February. So there you have it. I am planting sweet peas this week. This is the sweet pea planting memory in memory of a dear friend who said if you plant them at Thanksgiving time, and then if they freeze, you plant them again at Valentine's Day, and you still get sweet peas before Mother's Day. So that's what we're doing. We're talking about the possibilities, the probabilities. If you are growing things like collard greens, they'll taste better this week than they have. If you are growing things like Brussels sprouts, they will actually take off and grow. And if you come to visit us at supertalk.tv today, you will see my platter of roasted vegetables, which I have to say is one of the best things I've ever cooked.
I saw that. I do have a breakfast, but that looked delicious.
Well, it's an alternative to other stuff. I don't have to do green bean casserole anymore. There's other people to do that. So
it's always nice when you have some help. I hope everybody that's out there had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We're still kind of working your way through the weekend of Thanksgiving. It's great that it's always on a Thursday. So, you know, you have great bosses like we do. We get a day off and get to come hang out on a Saturday. But I hope everyone is being safe and has had a wonderful and fulfilling and amazing time so far. And I know I have, and I'm very thankful to be here with you today. Thank you.
The very best part of the Thanksgiving holiday to me is the fact that people are nice to each other for the most part. And I realize that's not true everywhere and all the time, but there is a certain comity at the Thanksgiving table, at least. So take the other stuff elsewhere. And I appreciate that at this time of the year. Today is National Mason Jar Day, Lance. I'm thinking of all the things that we put in mason jars, and we have to thank Mr. Mason. He indeed patented the first hermetically resealable glass jar with a screw top made for food preservation, 1858. We've been doing this for a while.
Thank goodness, because that's one of those things that has seemingly been kind of important, you know, canning goods.
Well, and actually the glass jars changed so many things because they could be treated differently than other things that had come along before that, and because they were tight and topped and all those sorts of bits and pieces of the whole mason jar technology, we have food in the winter in places where we would not. So I think that whole business. But, you know, it's also really great for everything from flower arranging to, I mean, let's face it, now you can find little salt and pepper shakers that are the teeny tiny little mason jar things, as well as moonshine and tiny mason jars.
Yeah, they got the minis. A little bit of everything.
That's kind of fun. So anyway, I just thought that was an interesting note because I don't remember ever living without them. And still don't.
Well, and if you grew up, I mean, I wasn't a farmer, but my grandparents were my mama and papa, and everything was in a mason jar that you saved.
Yeah, green beans.
Yeah, in fact, okra, green beans, all kinds of stuff.
One of the best projects that I ever did. You know, I'm the queen of. The teachers are getting something I made for Christmas. I hope they like it. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't, but they knew it was from me. And one of my very favorite experiments was what variety of okra will fit in the jar best in the mason jar. Because you only want to use a small mason jar. You don't want to give somebody a gift that weighs 2 pounds. That's not fun.
Well, and you're wasting your vinegar.
Well, not the vinegar. It's trying to get it to the classroom without it being broken, too. So that was one of my better ones, and I do have particular choices. Yes, it does have to do with when you pick it, but there are some that just grow so rapidly, you might as well be slicing them long ways and grilling them. And, yes, you can do that. So I was in my world of – oh, now, see, now we're getting other people's food. We're getting – That's wonderful. Thanks, y'all. I can recognize a deviled egg, even though I have to say that's a lot of paprika, but maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
Oh, the more the merrier on the paprika.
Okay. Ooh. Okay. I'm going to tell you something else that I hope you all will be doing now, and in addition to eating all the leftovers and being nice to everybody that you run into, especially those people that don't get the day off, for goodness sakes, or the weekend or whatever. We appreciate y'all being nice to us. But there are some things that need to be done, and I'm happy to announce that the tree that keeps dropping limbs from not exactly sure whose tree it is onto my greenhouse has lost the last upper limb that it can drop. So that brings me to the subject of saws and saw safety. And I want all of you, everybody's going to have something they want to cut back. You may be going out cutting down a Christmas tree. You may be trimming some junipers or some magnolias or some things to make a decoration for the house. You might be making some garlands. I don't know. But just like in the kitchen, in the garden, more cuts, more wounds happen with dull tools than with sharp ones. Because when you take that lopper, for example, that's not sharp, and you go to press it on to the, and you realize that you're bending the branch, what do? You push it harder, and then the next thing you know, you've knocked it through, but you've also knocked yourself in the head with it. Or you have pushed it through so hard that you've cut your thumb on the way. And there's so many things that you don't need to do in terms of that extra force if you will just give yourself the opportunity to take care of the saws. Whether it doesn't really matter whether you're working with my favorite, the folding saw with the serrated edge, that's really good for a lot of things. Whether you might have a pole saw, you might be, you know, harvesting mistletoe this weekend, who knows? But there's so many things. Take a look at it. Give it a little bit of an edge. Give it some oil. If you have a handle that's wood, make sure you oil that as well so that you don't get splinters. It's real important to take care of the tools. I do like the bucket of sand that people plunge their tool heads into when they're not using them. But I got to tell you that it's also true that we end up with an awful lot of water in there sometimes, just depending on where you are keeping that. So give yourself the opportunity to take care of your tools a little bit better. I think it's important, and I know that you will be safer and cut better. And wear your gloves. Come on. Be a grown-up. You know that. And in fact, we can talk about gloves. I have gloves today that I purchased because it said that I could use my fingertips. Well, it doesn't work. So I need to have gloves that the fingertips come off of if I'm going to wear them and still be able to do any of that fine work. But sometimes all you're looking for is protection for your hands. And particularly when you're using a saw, might be a chainsaw, might be a handsaw, you do need to protect your hands. So to do that, please. This is, one of the things that goes on at this time of the year. It's really a transitional kind of year. We talked last week about the pumpkins, the disappearing pumpkins. Oh, my goodness. I saw a whole truck full of disappearing pumpkins going by the other week. I don't know exactly where they were headed, but it made me think of you. This was around Tuesday. It made me think of all of y'all and the whole question of what do you do with them? I heard a famous chef say that, no, I don't do anything with the pumpkins. I get the canned pumpkin and use that in all the recipes. Well, okay, but that's, I don't know. What do you do with them? Tell me about it. Let me know. There are...
I will say this. I wanted you to...
Y'all are so funny. Yeah.
We had a.
I'm sorry. There's a hoo ha going on the text line.
The last night we got a score wrong, and if you ever want to bring people from all walks of life together, it doesn't matter black, white, yellow, red, Presbyterian, Catholic, Muslim. Everybody.
North Mississippi, South Mississippi.
It doesn't matter.
When
they are on top of it, and we're so appreciative. It is a hoot though, because that is the one thing. If you want to bring people together, give a wrong score.
Everybody is
in unison.
There are people who are not quite as aware of the excitement and power of talk radio who will think, well, I wonder if anybody's listening. All you have to do is say something real stupid.
Yeah, well,
you will find out in a big hurry.
When it's the North and South Championship.
Exactly.
And we named McGee the winner, which they weren't, but the score, we had two. And, you have to flip a coin
sometimes. Make a call, yeah.
And Butch, we grabbed the 50 to wrong one, and it happened to be the other. Had a couple of callers, though, as they always do, called, and I love them because they're like, hey, this is what happened. And you'll give you the lowdown. So, yeah, thank you guys for being sharp as broken glass, as always.
We are not talking into the void.
No.
When I was taught to do this, I was taught to recognize that I needed to speak as if there was one person that I was talking to and that there were a whole lot of others eavesdropping. And I think that's part of what the joy of it is. When I listened to the radio as a kid, in the dark at night with it turned down low enough so my parents didn't realize I was still awake with the radio on, that was some of the best radio listening you could ever do, because you're hearing at night, of course, in clear places you can hear far, far away from where you actually are back in the old AM days. This is not now. Now you're either in or you're out. But with AM, there was a greater latitude in the amount of dialing that one could do. And it made a lot of difference. Now we flip through a million different feeds, podcasts, channels, and one thing and another listening to something. We're just really glad you decided that you wanted to make us your priority, because you know what? That's how come we get to stay here. So, oh, by the way, beautiful, beautiful. Y'all know I don't ever do fungi and mushrooms, but my friend who is a mycologist sent the picture of the turkey tail mushrooms, and they are so beautiful. I wanted to share them at supertalk.tv today, because I don't, it is another case where this is the time of year when I begin to get lots and lots of pictures of fungi. I do not identify fungi. I'm smart enough to know that I can't possibly know all of them. And in fact, mycologists will tell you that you don't. But anyway,
we just had that conversation before we went on air about the yellow wax melty stuff you
gooey
see.
Thing.
Gooey whatever. Like an alien force has landed.
I could go look it up. I'm sure I could. Yeah. But I still might not be right.
It's not like pudding. You're not eating this stuff, you know.
No, I'm not.
Stay back.
I don't even want to look at the bear that's eating it, you know.
No, I don't know what does. I mean, yeah, I've seen it.
Speaking of bears, y'all, there's a story this week about the bears taking over Lake Tahoe. Now, I have not been to Lake Tahoe in many moons, but when I was there, everybody knew that there were bears up, you know, when it's where they live. It's in Northern California. They're in the woods. But it brings me to something that we talk about here, but we don't necessarily associate it with bears. Bad things happen when you don't take care of your space. And we talk about that here in terms of our urban infrastructure. We talk about it in terms of our own homes. We certainly talk about it all the time in terms of our gardens. If we are not out there controlling the weeds in the vegetable patch, frankly, the weeds are going to take over the vegetable patch, first of all, and then they're also going to attract insects that are going to eat our vegetables or our flowers or whatever it is. So both of those things make no sense whatsoever to do, so you have to take care of these things. But the bears in Lake Tahoe have discovered that the people who have not been there quite as long, and there's been a big onrush of people in the last, say, since the pandemic, they don't know how to take care of their garbage. And so the bears are happy to do that. Well, now the bears have learned to open sliding doors and unscrew jars. And so it's a really big problem that is created by people, by human beings, not understanding what it is that they have to do.
Those cost of unintended consequences.
Yes.
Sounds like a good idea to give them a Zag Nut, but on the great outdoors, it did not work out well.
No. And Yogi Bear in the picnic basket.
My picnic basket.
It's a really, really bad thing. Really, really. We don't want that. Trust me. The bears are bigger than your car.
Oh, yeah. They'll eat it. So, you let them.
They'll tear it up. We're going to come back, take a call from Mabel, who's in Jackson this morning, and we will be right back.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms.gov.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Shovel, reminding you how important it is to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig anywhere in or around any homeowner's yard. It doesn't matter if you're putting in a new mailbox, installing a fence, French drain, sprinkler system, even a flower bed. You need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig, or you could end up responsible for a water line leak, utility line with gas or propane, or even worse. Safety is in your hands. Call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Garden Mama here.
Love those movies. Goodness.
Yeah, we're starting a little early this year, folks.
No, we're not. Not for these.
Not for this one.
Not for this.
So much fun. So much fun. I do have some more new Christmas music. It's not new. It's new old Christmas music that I'm going to add in this year, just because there's so much of it. And there's so much to be appreciated and enjoyed.
And you know, I just bought, people probably think I'm crazy, but I just bought the, hold on just a sec. I just bought the National Lampoon's European Vacation, one of my favorites. Fritz, Helga! Yeah, they just take over.
Just crazy.
Yeah, I love those movies, all of them, though. There's just something about the National Lampoon's. You know, those they nail it. I mean, even if they're corny and kind of goofy and... But they're all
good. We kind of thrive on corny.
Yeah, here. I mean, the first one. Then you go into the European Vacation. You got Christmas. Then you got, you know, Vegas and all that. But, I mean, it is they're great. And it's good feel-good stuff.
Yes, right. Yes. Yeah. And all those people are still glad that we're watching them. So that's kind of fun, too. Really fun texts coming in this morning. Ken in Jackson is talking to his plants. Understandable. He brought both of the plants in. He's got his Christmas cactus. One's growing and one's not. And we've been talking about these plants for ages now, and I just love this. Maybe if they're together, they'll decide to grow. Sometimes, believe it or not, putting plants in a group does seem to inspire one or another, partly because we think it does, but actually what's going on usually is that we're paying more attention to them because there's a group of plants. And also we're paying more attention to them because, frankly, they're producing more humidity around themselves and around each other. And sometimes that can help one or another of them grow a little bit. It's kind of fun. And he's been trying to get these things to go. It's a good potting mix, which, again, we talk about in Christmas cactus, needing to be potting soil as well as perlite. So
before we get to Mabel, that's you know, about to start planting some color. About to throw some stuff in some pots.
Yes,
and
yes.
Get some stuff out there that's colorful. Don't think the dog's going to eat it. you never know. He's found the candy cane, so I've got a little head fake going, got a little time. So outside of pansies, you know, where's the color going to come from? What do I do? Mexican petunias...
They're still growing.
They're 4 feet tall.
They'll collapse and come back again, probably, because it hasn't been that cold yet.
I bet there's been seven blooms
but
on those.
Snapdragons and really some of the other things that are doing so well right now are kind of unexpected. But we have had a beautiful fall for Sasanquas, and you can get them to fit in containers. They're dwarf. They're like 3 feet tall. And they're woody and green and beautiful, and then they bloom in the springtime. So those are fun. There's also a couple of other things that are still going at my house in the onion department that, frankly, probably are going to bloom because they've decided they like it out there. But you can still get some really nice color if you're looking for actual color. You can still get that, not only just from the poinsettias, but from amaryllis and from a whole bunch of other things. You just have to bring them in at night. Mm-hmm. But as far as putting stuff out in the garden at this point, I'm going with the Sasanquas, snapdragons, foxglove, delphinium, you know, all of the overwintering annual flowers because they're blooming. But I'm also looking at some things that are maybe going to be there a little bit longer, like the Sasanquas and
hollies. Yeah, and that was the thing I wanted to ask you, perennial wise, you know, had hedges, shrubs, you know, they were, you know, azaleas, they did not make it through the rough last couple of years of, you know, the ups and downs and the frost and the heat and the dry, and they all died. I have one that made it. It's there. It's okay. But the other five, it's, you know, I love it. And it's the little engine that could out of the other five. And now I'm going to end up, you know, kind of pulling those root systems out. What would you put back in there if you wanted something that was, you know, gave you a little cover? It's off the back of the house. It's not going to be the most sunny side of the house. Mm-hmm. And it's on a little bit of a slope. But the bed itself will hold, you know, a decent, you know, size shrub and plant. Did for years until this last round. And, you know, it just looks bare. I'm, you know, I don't like it. And what would you, I don't have 20 years to wait for a... I'd be 70. I'd be 70 then. So I want to say, what would give me a couple years? I know, but I don't want to wait that long to have the cover that once was there.
Of course, of course.
So that's do you have to go big?
You can go middle-sized. You can go in the like a 5-10 gallon rather than a 1 gallon container.
Pay up
a little bit now, and in a couple of years you'll have plenty of cover. Really, with any of those things, there are so many that grow in the shade that that have variegation attached to them, like hydrangeas and pittosporums and those kind of smaller shrubs, they grow real fast.
Yeah.
And you can fill that space with both flowers and color, but also interesting leaves and things in no time at all.
And that's kind of why I would rather go with a variety pack mm-hmm. rather than mm-hmm. the same thing over and over.
I'm going to always say look into the native group, whatever garden center you go to, because there's going to be some native shrubs that don't look terrific. For example, oak leaf hydrangeas. But you put them in that space, and in about a year, you're going to be impressed with yourself and okay. your choices, because they're things that come to their own in that garden setting that don't really do that well in containers.
Well, and now that the bird dog is, you know, he's more interested there,
that's
in...
Another that's another factor, certainly.
Yeah, I think I've gone through the eat every plant in sight phase of this guy. Now he's into Nerf footballs. He thinks he's a wide receiver now. So instead of a plant eater, thank you. That was something I've been staring at.
There's a bunch of choices, and really depending on your willingness to either put a soaker hose under there or.
Oh, I can do
that. You can't really keep them from getting hot or cold, but you can do a little bit to ameliorate the circumstances.
Well, and that brings me to my last little point is if you're out and you see really beautiful pine straw, I've saved a little cash lately. I went out scouting looking for, there's a lot of nice little low-rise pine trees and thickets around where I live, and went out looking, and I said, okay, cool, I found a spot where I can go get a little pine straw and do a little favor for Mom, and got back to the house, and I realized right across the street was a thicket of pines, and I went over and raked up tons and tons of pine straw, and it's beautifully red this year. I mean, it just right this time of year, I don't know if everyone else is seeing the same thing, but, man, those pine trees that have dropped. What is the key to getting pretty red?
Well, we're seeing a little bit of color. It requires a long fall. It requires time for those nutrients to shift out.
Okay.
What I noticed today is the Orangeola Japanese maple that I have has finally begun to turn orange. It had gone from green to brown on one piece of it, but the rest of it just sat there and was green. Now it's got a nice orange cast to it, but it still has some green underneath. Things are having a hard time figuring out exactly what to do.
Yeah.
You know, you're exactly right.
Cool. I was curious.
Speaking of which, if you've got a leaf pile, please turn it right now.
Yeah, well,
this is the perfect time to do that too.
Well, excellent. Okay, and lastly, what do you do with 400 pounds of tallow berry things? Will they break down? Can you like off the
Chinese tallow
tree? Because there's the little balls, and they've been dropping and dropping and dropping, and they're it's either the squirrel dropping them on me, or either
they'll throw them. They'll throw them at you.
But so is that? Can you compost that shell?
I would rather you crushed it and burned it.
Okay.
Because the seeds are very viable.
Well, I've got a fire pit. That's my point. Mm-hmm. I wanted. What do I do with that? I got plenty of them. It looks like it'd be great kindling.
Yes, it will.
Know, but not something you want to try to mulch up and use.
Okay. You do not.
Too many seeds or whatever that may.
Well,
be
too
in
much
there.
Chance for it to actually be part of its own future, and you don't want that. You're trying to get that out. You're trying to get that undone.
Well, we do have Mabel now. I wanted to let you know that Mabel is with
us. Well, good. Hey, Mabel, tell me what's going on today. Hello. Oh, she's giving them some instructions.
Yeah, we got to turn. She's turning the radio down.
She knows. Good morning, Mabel. Oh no, we lost her.
She'll be back.
She wants to know about the peace lily.
Yeah, she wanted to know how to grow a peace lily. She had just been given one, and I told her last year we had given one, and mine's in amazing shape now.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
that is exactly what she was wanting to know about.
Well, peace lilies. Here's what I know about peace lilies. Peace lilies can be a companion in your house, or they can be the most frustrating plant that anyone's ever given you. And in my world, they are a beautiful plant that gives me the opportunity to appreciate nice green color, beautiful air-cleaning plants, and at the same time, they don't ever have to go outside if you don't want them to. I'll put them out maybe 1 week or so in the shade outside this year, and they actually are in better condition for not having me deal with them that way. Is Mabel with us now? Hey, Mabel, what's going on?
I have a peace lily that my daughter passed, and And I got one of her flowers, and I got the peach lily. And I want to know how to save it.
Oh,
and
Mabel.
And replant it because it's in a small pot.
Yes. Well, is it doing okay today? In other words, it's not wilting or anything like that?
It's got, at the bottom, it got a few little leaves that's drying up.
Okay. The trick, if there is one, to peace lilies is to keep them in a container for a number of years at a time. If it's already, though, getting dry at the bottom, it probably does need to be moved up, but only into a slightly larger container with some good potting soil that you don't, you're going to keep it not damp. You're going to let it dry out a little bit between waterings, but you don't ever want it to dry out too much. That's when, you know, you've seen these at people's houses and they just fall over and then they water them and they come back up. You don't really want to do that. You want to keep it to where it doesn't do that wilting business. Don't put it directly in the window. Put it like about 3 or 4 feet from a window because it doesn't want direct sun. And my condolences to you. It's a terrible thing. I will tell you, though, that I have a peace lily that was also a gift when someone passed away, and I've had it now for 30 years. So they can live in your house.
What kind of soil I need to put it in?
I would get potting soil and then a little bit. I'll get some good potting soil and a little bit of perlite and mix them together. So you got about twice as much soil, but you've also got that perlite in there to help it drain better. That's what keeps them from. What happens also is that they, if they're watered too much, they'll get a root rot. Go to the garden center and get a mix that is for houseplants, African violet, something like that, and just look at the ingredients and it'll say perlite. So it's an easy one. It's that white stuff that you see in there all the time.
Okay. And what kind of fertilizer I need to fit, you know?
Just any kind of houseplant food. Whatever you're using on other stuff.
Yeah, right.
Miracle Grow or Schultz or any of that.
Okay. Now, will it be getting too much heat from the,
I don't want the vent to push on it, but it is a tropical plant. It would rather be warm than cold. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I'll be calling you back if I
please
do what you told me.
Please
to.
Do. I'll talk to you again soon. My heart goes with you today, Mabel. Thank you. You know,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. We had on the text line, please talk about details on your planting of sweet peas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting question, like the details. How does Garden Mama do it?
Sort of different ways at different times, but the best advice I have for you is that sweet peas are one of these plants that need to have a very well-drained soil. Sweet peas are a delightful flower. They are one of those plants that you know the smell of them, you know the look of them, and they're absolutely beautiful. And when you get a chance to grow them, as we say, you plant them this week, this Thanksgiving week, and if they freeze through the winter in Zone 8, then you plant them again at Valentine's Day, but you will always get, eventually, you will get some flowers. You may get them sooner, you may get them later. It just really depends. But sweet peas are one of those things that have to have just a little bit of attention. I like the tall ones. I like the ones that grow on a trellis, and the string-type sweet pea trellis is a very effective, inexpensive way of giving them some support. They are going to weave themselves into it. You know, this is a little 4x4 string squares, I'm sorry, that are in a trellis form, and you hook them up into whatever container, or you can certainly grow these in the ground. If your soil is very well drained, you won't need to do anything else to it. But you can grow them in a deep container, or you can grow them in a garden bed as long as you've got sun and well-drained soil. The sweet peas themselves, of course, are a very tightly packed, dense package. They're intended to basically float to their new destination. And as a result, you're going to need to soak them overnight, or at least a few hours is my experience. I don't want them to pop open. Some people will go ahead and scratch through them with an emery board or some other kind of file, and I find that I don't get as good a success with that. But if they are nice and hydrated, I will have good success with them sprouting. They're big seeds. Plant them about an inch deep and keep the area nice and damp until they come up, which will be usually about 8 or 9 days. It takes about a week, but a little bit more than that won't hurt. Sweet peas are fun. They take a long time to grow, particularly the tall climbing ones, but they do offer the opportunity of some pretty leaves in the meantime. And then when they bloom, of course, they're just spectacular. I hope you'll plant some sweet peas. Lots of colors, too. I like that flower. My goodness, what a beautiful really lovely cassia that is. The last night for some of those in the open areas. Pretty flowers, though. I like seeing that. All right, now. We got worlds and worlds to talk about. Stick around. We'll be back.
We've been so long. You've been hiding out. I know that's true. Girlie, mama, sure need you. Girlie, mama, we've been so long.
Our farm's amber waves of grain become your tasty creations in the kitchen. From a bushel of wheat comes the flour you need to enjoy the breads, cakes, cereals, and pastas we all love so much. And even if you aren't a world-renowned chef, wheat grown in Mississippi is used in many of the foods you buy on the grocery store shelves. Wheat, just one of the many commodities a Mississippi farmer grows for you. The Farm Families of Mississippi.
How can propane gas enhance your outdoor experience this season? When it comes to outdoor grilling, there is no better source than propane. But have you thought about a beautiful outdoor fireplace and lighting fueled by propane as well? The perfect setting. Worry-free grilling with propane. A golden propane fire to sit by. And soothing propane lights burning in the background. Impress yourself, friends, and family with propane. Propane. Clean American energy. Visit mspropane.com to learn more.
The best made to order.
Munching on a pork rind when she pulled up. She had to be thinking this is where rednecks come from. She had Hollywood written on her license plate. She was lost and looking for the interstate. Needing directions, and I was a man for the job. The caution light. There's a little country store with an old coke sign. You gotta stop and ask Miss Bell.
And yes, he does say there's an old coke sign there. Somebody sent me the lyrics and said, did you know that's what he says? Like, yes, I know that's what he says.
You gotta have your turnip greens too.
Well, that's another thing that's going to taste a little better in cold weather. It's true. The turnips themselves.
Yeah, and that's
the greens may be a little floppy, but the turnips themselves are going to be a lot better with some cool.
It's something about this time of year, though, that the smorgasbord, a cornucopia of beautiful corn, and then the greens, and then all the colors that are there. And it's kind of stark colored outside. Things start browning up, but mm-hmm. the table mm-hmm. gets lively.
Yes.
It just seems that is that on purpose? Do you think
sure.
was that something that happened as a matter of, hey, let's cook all this pretty stuff.
I think people, for example, why in the world would you have a root cellar? I mean, I realize we don't have cellars necessarily in our part of the world, but we have places where we store things. Why would we put up beets? Why would we put up all of these? Because we don't have anything that color in the middle of the winter. We need not only the vitamins and the minerals and the tastiness of it, but we also do appreciate because you eat with your eyes first.
Yeah. Well, I had somebody is a mentor of mine in the bar world. When I was asking about all these drinks I had to learn and everything, he goes, look, man, this ain't science. If it looks if it looks good, they're going to like it. And, you know, there's something appealing about visual.
I would say it also needs to have a kick if it has alcohol in it, considering what the drinks taste. But, you know.
Don't short pour them and make it ugly. You know, seriously, it is. You know, I think that's why I migrate toward flowers so much. I grew up around a grandmother that, you know, absolutely adored them and painted every mm-hmm. which way but loose those. And I love a landscape. But there's something about flowers.
She opened that window in your head.
Yeah, and it's always been there. I migrate to that. And that's one of the wonderful things I get to experience about this show. Every Saturday is not only just getting to visit with you and hang out and learn, but seeing what our listeners are growing.
Such
love
fun things.
That,
this is Gloria's roses in Clinton are frosted this morning, and they're just beautiful. It's such a pretty, pretty sight. Thank you for sending that. We have a question about starting white oak acorns, how to do that. And really, that's the same as buckeyes or any other acorns. First of all, you look at them. You make sure they don't have holes in them already or something else that's going to cause them not to do well. And then you just float them. Put them in some water. The ones that float aren't going to sprout, so you plant the ones that didn't float. And that's really the, if you do that, you will end up with, for example, a whole slew of seedlings coming up in a pot, and then you can transfer them out and put them into either larger containers or out into the garden, wherever you need to do.
We had a huge flood in the Delta a few years ago, and you'd go into the high areas and the high ground where a lot of those white oak and red oak acorns had settled. It was the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. As far as you could see, it was like money. You could just see, oh, if anybody really wanted oak trees, I've got a bazillion times 10. And they all grew, you know, they'd get up about two feet, I guess, before the, you know, the canopy was too dense for them to, it was really
But
something.
You could certainly dig them up
in
and take them somewhere.
In 40 years of my life, probably noticing, I've never seen that. It was just one of those perfect moments where Mother Nature said, "Get me oak," and oak was ready.
Before the squirrels and I came to a more rapprochement, I would have patches like 3 feet across of just perfect oak trees where they had buried things. And as soon as I raked the mulch, there they would be. And it was not happy for me because I was not in the oak tree business.
Yeah, if you were.
But if you were, that would be delightful. It just didn't happen to be my world.
And the squirrels themselves, it must have had a light. The squirrels probably weren't as readily there because of the flooding. And maybe they had my,
they
and so
had
there
to
was just
leave
a
few.
Right, exactly. a few extra sitting around.
Jackie and Brandon wants to know if she says she's read that you should cut back lantana in the fall, but she usually cuts it back in the spring. I cut it back whenever it turns brown, finally. And that seems to work relatively well for me. But I also have some that gets a certain amount of disease on it in colder weather, and I will cut that off just because I don't like to look at it. But it doesn't seem to have any impact on it in terms of the way the lantana does later. She says, asks also rather about hostas. I'm not going to touch the hostas if I can help it. They're just a little bit finicky, and what happens, I think, is that people start pulling on those leaves to clean them up a little bit, and then you end up pulling too hard, and you disturb the crown of the hosta, and they're really picky. So don't. I would leave the hostas alone till they're completely brown, and then just gently take the burned leaves off at that point. Chad in Van Cleef, I'm so jealous. Can I just be jealous for a moment? His Setsuma trees were so loaded that they bent their branches down to the ground.
Yeah, my mother's like, I got some Satsumas.
I'm so jealous.
She's going to use them as like a table setting. I said, or you could eat them.
Excuse me, that's lunch.
I said, we could eat these. Yeah, they're going to look so pretty around the table.
We can learn to juggle. No, we're going to eat them. That's what they're for.
They're
but anyway,
delicious.
He says that he knows MSU says to cut those branches that are doing that, do that pruning in the springtime. Here's what I say. I agree with them, except if, for example, as was the case here, the branches are going to break because they're so loaded with Satsumas. And if they are actually starting to crack a little bit, yes, I'm going to go ahead and prune them because it's not ever going to be. The issue will be that the weather warms up and they try to begin to grow in the wintertime, and that's not good either. So you will have to keep an eye on that and probably take off any new growth that tries to sprout before the weather evens out in the springtime. You would not want to leave. But it's at the bottom of the tree anyway, so you don't want it to be there. Okay, so anyway, interestingly enough, this is fun. Yes, Kathy, we will figure that out. I love this. People are on the road. Everybody's going places and doing things. But we're going to do that basil gifting I appreciate so much. Now I have to go home and find a plant for her. Luckily, I already have something. So, you know what else today is? It's not Bullwinkle, but it's Moose Day. Now, I know for a fact that you are a moose-type person. I have never made a moose in my life. I have eaten many of them and enjoyed it. But what is the secret?
Of moose? They're huge. It's like a mountain of meat.
Not that moose.
Biggest thing ever.
Not that moose. I want to know about, is it egg whites? Is it whipped cream? What do you put in those things?
Sugar.
Lots of sugar, apparently.
Sugar,
yes.
It's similar to making a custard, right? I mean, it would be thicker.
It's not cooked, though.
Yeah, it's not going to be cooked. But so you're making that. It's a raw setting, so and cooled and chilled and all that. I mean, I've eaten it a lot. I'm like you. There was a national Boston cream filling day the other day.
Oh,
and so there's a lot of similarities in how you make all this stuff, but I think white flour and stuff like that, you know, I'm not sure on the mousse versus this.
Well, we will need some input.
Somebody knows
we
how
will
to
need some thicken, input.
Probably sweetened condensed milk in there somewhere.
Bullwinkle, on the other hand,
Lacedo.
Is the scientific name. You know, I always tell you that the word moose, in terms of the bullwinkle type moose, comes from an ancient word from that actually just means moss. It's a description of the creature, but the scientific name, by the time they got around to doing that,
whipped in meringue. Mm-hmm.
They went for an Algonquin word, musu, which means bark stripper, because that's what the moose were famous for.
Yeah, I'm a pudding fan, so in any form you.
Well, yeah. I like a moose, but I don't know how to do one.
Well, incredibly light and ridiculously rich. Most basic moose is made of folding aerators into the base, whipped cream,
so
meringue,
egg
whites and sugar, pate bomba, whole eggs and or yolks and sugar, and combine them.
Well, all right now.
Got to fold it around a lot.
Now we need to have a competition. In addition to Mayha jellies, we need a mousse competition.
Garden Mama's mousse competition.
All right now. Don't worry. We've got more to go here this morning. Thank you for being with us on the Garden Mama Show.
Under the sea, in an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
If you are building a new home or remodeling an older home, Amazing Propane is for you. A propane tankless water heater, a propane generator, a propane gas grill and oven, propane fireplaces, and even lighting. Propane, such a versatile, clean, cost-effective source of energy for any home. Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com to learn more.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. A lot of businesses are losing opportunities to get new customers if they're not online. With the power of SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital, you can reach potential customers and get more referral and repeat business. The highly trained and trusted team at SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital is ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
Do you suffer from...
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between. Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome in, welcome in. It is just a pleasure to be here. Thank you so very, very much. Whatever day it is where you are, gardening is part of life, and it is one of the parts of life that really does take up a tiny little bit of energy for all of the joy and, frankly, good food it brings. Not to mention good exercise and the opportunity to get outside and enjoy things a little bit more than we might ordinarily do. Talking in the last hour, we had a question about starting oak trees from acorns. And yes, that does apply to really anything that you're going to start like that begins from a hard seed cover. Things like acorns, things like buckeyes protect that seed, and they do it very, very well. So what you want to be aware of is that you need to help them realize whether or not they're going to sprout. First of all, if they're cracked, if they have holes in them, that's not the ones to plant. But if they don't float, then they will likely have enough of the heart in them to be able to grow. The seed cups like that, the acorns that float, are not the ones that are going to be viable. So give yourself that opportunity. The other thing you need to know right now, as we were talking with Lance, is the question about tallow trees is always an issue. The Chinese tallow trees are one of the most invasive that we encounter in the South. So if you have them and those popcorns, you know, the seed pods have fallen off, they unfortunately will last a long time. They will survive through years and years and years. And they will continue to sprout and be a problem because they shade out everything native underneath them. So make sure that you do get rid of those Chinese tallow seed pods, whether you are grinding them up and throwing them away, or, I don't know, maybe you can burn them. I'm not worried. Depends on where you live, really.
Again, yeah. Make like a wax factory after
but,
that.
But after that you, it does make quite a mess. So those are some of the things that you should be doing at this point in the year. If you don't turn the leaf pile, by the way, the warming temperatures and then cold weather and then a little bit of rain and the next thing you know, the rot's going on and you're not paying attention to it. Next year, you wonder how come it's never really made much progress. It needs a little air. And the way you get that is by turning that pile. That's why we talk about the 3x3 cube, the 3-foot cube, rather, as being the most practical amount of leaf material to put into a compost or to particularly into a leaf pile because it's easy to turn. You know that, of course, if you're going to do a traditional compost, you need to have two parts of that brown to one part of green, whether it happens to be lawn clippings or something from the kitchen or something like that. It doesn't really matter, but you do really want to keep out of the pile the noxious weeds that you have been fighting all year, and certainly that includes the tallow trees. So be careful what you compost. Compost most everything. Please compost the classics, leaves and trimmings from your plants and coffee grounds and eggshells and one thing and another like that. Please, by all means, compost those. But think a little bit. Bear a little bit in mind. You may want to burn or trash some of the others. This has been a really great opportunity in this changing weather for us to talk about some stuff that has maybe not got as much attention as it should. I saw someone out with a bag of tulips planting them yesterday, which told me that that person had already put them in the refrigerator since early October. We need 6 to 8 weeks of cold in the refrigerator to really go ahead and trigger that tulip to do its best job. So when you go to the garden center today and you run into a bag of tulips, should you buy them? Yes, absolutely. Throw them in the refrigerator and you plant them at New Year's. You'll be fine. It'll be great. But all of the different ways that we interpret tulips in art are fascinating. And some of them are cruel. Some of them, like C-R-E-W-E-L, not mean, but the kind of stitchery. And some of them are painted. Some of them are even done in more elaborate things like mosaics and appliques. But the way people have celebrated tulips over the years is an inspiration to me and probably to you too. We have many things that are tulip-shaped, whether we recognize it or not. They say that the classic champagne flute has that particular shape to it, but for me, it's always been more like a trumpet. So we see those things. The reason that we call plants what we call them many times is because of what they look like to a number of people. But sometimes that's why we have so many names for the same plant, because everybody looked at it and saw something a little bit different. It's all in how you remember things, too. You might remember something as your grandmother's favorite flower, and that might be the only name you know for it, but that's okay. That's what you know, and you know it, so that's all right, too. I was interested to read this week that memories are not only in the brain. I mentioned it last week, but I really didn't. I had read the article, just a glance at it, and I went back and read it. Turns out that my kidneys are a memory organ. I did not know that, but I'm kind of interested in how we do hold on to those things. I wonder sometimes if the foods that we like so much at a particular holiday, if our memories, you know, because our guts really do have every bit of our brain. I mean, that's all attached, as you're well aware. So those things are all connected, and they all have the same sort of sensory processes. So the question becomes, do I really like dressing because of the putting the spoon in my grandmother's plate, or is it because it does something yummy for my tummy, and then that's when the memory is there? I don't know. It's something we really should think about. Give ourselves the opportunity to wonder a little bit, maybe sometimes. You ever go to, one of the things I love to do in the wintertime is to go to places where you can't help but feel like the rest of the world is available to you. You know, the winter can kind of close in on your mind, but if you go to an aquarium or if you go to an observatory, you're automatically put into another dimension and you have the opportunity to see other things. I am crazy about and hope that you will plant anemones and ranunculus. They are both called minor bulbs. I think that's because they're only about an inch tall, but they are beautiful flowers and they belong in everyone's garden more or less as an afterthought. You're not going to plant, unless you're growing cut flowers, you're not going to plant a field full of anemones. But on the other hand, you are going to put a few in there because they're so lovely, both in the garden as well as in the vase. But one of the reasons that we look at anemones with such interest is because they're so complicated as a flower. Well, so are the sea anemones. They all come from that same set of words, and they have to do with, for example, the starlet anemone has really incredible abilities to regenerate large parts of their bodies. They are sometimes injured, sometimes run over, sometimes, you know, dangerously attacked. And in any case, their ability to regenerate far surpasses that of the plants or the other animals that we know or the ones that bear that name. But I'm thinking that it's, for me, it's really interesting. The European Molecular Biology Labs folks are working on trying to understand how, at the molecular level, regeneration goes forward. I've been interested in this ever since I learned as probably a fourth grader that starfish can grow another arm. I was just fascinated. Why can't we? You know, I remember literally wondering about that.
Yeah, I'll take some injections.
I mean, come on, let's see. You know, let's do what we need to do.
I'll be the starfish guinea pig.
And I'll see about it. Our bodies are remarkably adept at challenges, but they're not particularly good at meeting this one. So the internal temperature apparently has a great deal to do with the anemone's ability to do all of this rejuvenation, and yet they can grow back entire parts of themselves. So trust me, the studies, you know, it's a hidden act to try and balance all of these things, how they can continue to be and continue to live at the same time that they're regenerating major parts. It's pretty incredible. Just, I love the fact that we're studying that now. We study so many interesting things in this
world. You know, there are a lot of things that we put money into that seem kind of, you probably ought not do that, but studying how to regenerate an arm sounds like a pretty good idea.
And the fact that it does go way back to the very basic science. Yeah. You know, it does. It's not something, we can't study it on people first. Mm-hmm.
You got to get back to
observing that anything could. Because there are some things that creatures on this earth, no matter what we are, can do that other things can't. Mm-hmm. But the notion of regeneration has always been one that has gone through people's desires and hopes.
And it's like the fountain of youth. They look for it pretty hard.
Could be. Greater longevity.
Yeah, but it could be inside of plants and animals where you find that,
exactly,
rather than some, you know, fountain where it's spewing water and you go drink from it.
We talk about the power of things like, you cut the main broccoli stem and each of the nodes underneath that on the plant is able to send up another flowering stalk. Now, it won't be the great big broccoli head that you saw, but it will be another very edible part of itself. That desire to continue to grow is certainly very present in our plants as well as it is in us. So it's just an interesting piece of it. I've been really interested in my neighbor. It has some kind of sad looking pansies, and I think they need fertilizer. I don't think they, it looks like they were not planted. They were planted in old soil where other things had been in a container, and they're all pale. So it occurred to me, what does pale mean in a plant? Well, in pansies, in any kind of annual with leafy greens, usually means you've used up all the nitrogen and you need to get another dose. You know, you need some more fertilizer. If your turnip greens are paler than your mustard greens, they probably need some fertilizer. If you've got sweet alyssum that's still growing, if you've got petunias, I've got one petunia plant that's determined to make it through all of this, and it looks pale. Well, I need to fertilize it to green up the leaves, but I'm not sure if that'll help. How much more cold weather can it take? Well, it's really a balancing act. So we're going to see how all of those things work out in time. But right now, it is a matter of what can we feed and who should we feed and who should we not. So looking at all of that paleness really made me have another couple of thoughts this week. I understand that not every conifer is bright green or dark green or whatever its shade of green is all the time. But in the winter, when everything else kind of gets gray or the leaves fall off or things are mostly brown, we notice our conifers. You might not even look back there and see it in the hedgerow or see it, you know, in the group of trees until everything else is kind of naked. And then all of a sudden you say, ooh, that doesn't look too good. How come those needles are strong and sharp, but they're not bright green? What happened to them? Sometimes juniper and cedar and things like that can be pale, and it may slow their growth as well. So sometimes it's your job is really to take a look and figure out if it's a problem or not. In most cases, it's not going to be a problem any more difficult than spider mites. If you have seen that this has been getting paler, you know, maybe a little part of it's even turned brown, get yourself a piece of white paper, typing paper. Get out there. I know I don't call it that anymore, but, you know, copier paper, whatever it is. Napkin, whatever you want to use. Thump the branch. Let something fall onto your paper. If it moves, it's spider mites. If it doesn't, it's dust, and you probably just need to clean the plant a little bit. But if it moves, it's spider mites. You can treat them with many different situations. You may absolutely need a drench, but if it's just a small problem, you can spray the plant with neem oil, and it will do just well. It will control them very, very well. If no mites are present, however, you do need to fertilize them. And yes, you can fertilize evergreen shrubs in the wintertime if they are suffering from pale. They're not going to be benefited by continuing to get paler and losing some of those leaves. So it's certainly a blanket about an inch deep of compost or composted manure is fine. And then sometime in the early part of the spring, you probably want to give them a complete shrub and tree fertilizer. I think that would be smart. I have been watching an amaryllis grow. This is one of those things. Why didn't I think of this? Well, I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. But there are places you can go on YouTube and look at an amaryllis growing day by day. It's like in somebody's garden, you know. They've got my classic yardstick next to it, so you can see how much taller it's getting and all that sort of stuff. I love that. Do that for your kids. You don't have to go on YouTube for it. You can do it in your living room. Get yourself an amaryllis bulb and a yardstick, and off you go. It's fun for grown-ups to watch, too. It's a pleasure for us, too. For example, when we force narcissus for the dining room table, we're doing a wonderful job of that all the time. So that those are easy to watch, and they're fun to see when you're doing that. There's no reason in the world not to. Oh, my goodness, the things that we can do. Looking at some of the pictures at supertalk.tv today, some things are beautiful. I love that chard, big pot of chard, and I believe that's from Mark, but I'm not sure about it. If you don't know about Swiss chard and you have any affection for that whole family of greens, or if you like beets at all, by all means, grab some Swiss chard at the grocery store. Before you grow it, you want to make sure you like it, okay? So, but it's one of those things that is much sweeter. The stems are much sweeter when they're blanched and then roasted a little bit than when they're just boiled up. They release their sugar much more effectively. A lot of people are still getting tomatoes. I trust that everybody that had some got them picked before the temperatures actually got below 32. It is the case. You can put them in a brown paper sack in the refrigerator, not the refrigerator, in the house, not in the refrigerator, and they will go ahead and ripen. People also will take some at this time of the year and go ahead and plant some in a container in their house just so they can start some small tomatoes. People do that. I wouldn't do it with a hybrid, but it's certainly a good way to propagate an heirloom. Now, one of the pieces of the puzzle at this time of the year are our friends, the poinsettias. I want to talk about them today, see how you all are feeling about them, and get some folks. I've had some opinions already thrown at me in this last week or so about whether to have a poinsettia or whether not to have a poinsettia. I'm even more about poinsettias than I am about live trees. I love live Christmas trees. I understand, though, that a lot of people, it's just too much to deal with, or frankly, the expense of it. You need to put the money into something else. Poinsettias you can find in price ranges from here to there. Get yourself some poinsettias, by all means, because they're beautiful. And they are one of the plants, as you well know, that can last for a long time. I have been enjoying the Thanksgiving Christmas cactus hybrid plant that I've got going. And the flowers are just beautiful. So I hope yours are as well. We probably need to be getting some of those photos in as we get closer on to Christmas. I hope you're being garden busy. I hope you're still giving something out there for the bees to feed on, a little bit of nectar here and there. And by all means, some beautiful berries coming on for December. We got a little cool weather just in time. I'm going to let Boz Lido us out of here.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
All of us at the Mississippi Propane Gas Association are committed to providing you with the best possible services and affordable values. We operate in a way that assures a safe, reliable, and economical fuel source. Our trained personnel constantly monitor the conditions of our gas systems to assure reliability and safety. Any repairs or modifications to a propane gas system must be performed by the qualified technicians of your propane provider as required by state and federal regulations.
Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com.
Garden Mama here.
I'll never be that good. Welcome back to the Garden Mama Show. Now, this is a great photograph, and I realize this is in the conversation about, I just meant Lance's pants, okay? But this is, and the guy's going to get some, and he's going to, but I do love this picture of the garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last picture before I had to put the covers on, but just looks beautiful. That, it brings me to tell you, if you're gardening in beds and you're not putting a row between mm-hmm. them for you to walk and to keep things clear, you're making a mistake. These are not highly elevated beds. This is not like a raised bed fancy thing with a bunch of boxes around it. This is a raised bed Mississippi style, as I call it, which means you have just enough elevation on the planting to get good drainage, but not so much that it's going to dry out a whole lot. Because we do have drier weeks than we have wet weeks a lot of times in the growing season. So it looks really good. I like it. Looks like it'd be easy to work. And that makes a lot of difference. Real important stuff. You know, euphorbias, gosh, have you got your poinsettia yet? I hope you do. I've seen pink. I've seen pink and white. I've seen red. I've seen red and white. I've seen everything in the world, including yellow and cream colors this year. Beautiful poinsettias. Do you know how hard that is to do? Good heavens, that's hard to do. I know because I've done it. But some tropical plants really have that Dr. Seuss quality that poinsettias have. They're green, and then they're red, and then they have little tiny yellow flowers, and they have funny red stems that stick out. I mean, just the plant world is a fascinating place, all of which are built, obviously, around the future of the plant. In our world, thank goodness, the ambassador to Mexico, Mr. Ponset, or Ambassador Ponset, brought that plant back because it'd been in Mexico. People in the tropics have known that plant forever, but we didn't know it as we know it now until he brought it back up, and they began at the Ecky Ranch in California. They began to grow poinsettias in large, large quantities and to breed them and to get people like all of us across the country to grow them in greenhouses and see which varieties did best in what areas and whose market wanted what and how all of those things happened. But poinsettias at the very base of them are really just wild out, wild euphorbias in that fam, that whole family of euphorbias are interesting. And some are a whole lot more interesting even than poinsettias just to look at. One time a plant delivers a lot of contrast the way that poinsettias do with their bracts and their leaves. But sometimes there's another quality to it. The really ethereal kind of flower that forms sometimes on a rugged looking plant can be just as interesting. And some of the euphorbias really do that. Flowering aloes probably are the most common in that group. But I got to tell you, there are a couple of the euphorbias that are just taking over. That you'll see them with names like cherry cobbler, pink cupcake. I don't know why they have such sweet names. I think that's perfectly silly. But I do love them. They have a lot of spines on them. They're more dangerous than they look. But they're excellent for containers and for very well-drained garden beds. I have a couple of them in a bed at my place that is the best drained of the bunch in my world. It's the one where I can grow Gerber daisies. So they are a passion unto themselves in terms of collecting them because each one is a little bit different than the others. The flowers are actually fascinating to me just because they're kind of like straws with bells on them, and yet the plants don't look like that at all. And it's another of that Dr. Seussian kind of category of plants that I hope you will pursue. Plants can be fun to look at, but to me they're even more interesting when they're just a little bit on the odd side. I don't know what all you're doing in your garden at right now, but I hope it does include some of those pansies and whatnot that I've been talking to you about. But if it doesn't, by all means, grow yourself some parsley. There are too many really opportunities, whether it's in containers or, you know, sometimes you'll see them planted. You'll see parsley plants planted, pansy plant, pansy plant, parsley plant all down the edge of a flower bed. That's lovely. Plus, it gives you a whole lot of parsley to eat, too. So why not, huh? Makes a lot of sense to me to put them all together. Now, do you like curly parsley or do you like flat parsley? I tend to like to grow curly parsley because it's so pretty. But I really do like to eat flat parsley, so I grow both of them most of the time. And the flat parsley for me tends to be the one that wins out in terms of greater amounts of space and also really greater amounts of attention for me. I do like it frozen a little bit and put into something, into the same sort of mirepoix, which other people would do. With me, it's onions, green onions, and a little bit of parsley, and maybe some thyme, depends on what else is around. But I like to freeze those, and then that gives me something to throw in to any vegetable or any soup or any marinade all during the time of year when I can't pick so easily outside. One of the things that we talk about around here a lot is the sense of place. And as you're decorating for the holiday, I really hope that you will consider that. You can, you know, there's some beautiful wreaths, beautiful things that grow here that we just don't necessarily take advantage of enough, and I wish that we would. A door spray made from your magnolia tree, for example, is one of the things. The simplest one is just three leafy branches wired together and decorated with a great big red bow. Now, you can paint the leaves orange if you want to. You can paint them gold, you know, depending on what part of the season you're trying to celebrate. But however you do it, you can even spray them with canned snow if you like to do that. But what I want you to do is to understand that you're putting something from your world into your world. We talk about a lot about indoor and outdoor relationships between the garden and the house. And sometimes they are kind of separated. Sometimes they're sort of enjoined. For instance, you have a window and you've got flowers outside and you cut those and put them inside on the table. You have done a little bit of that indoor-outdoor coordination. But when you put those magnolia leaves or that juniper berry leaf, juniper berry wreath, or any of those other sorts of things that you make from your own garden, heck, you can take the acorns and make wreaths out of them. There's nothing like that. There's nothing like your own place and your own sense of being there. I'm particularly enamored with, lately, these hanging branches that's sort of like the one branch off the Charlie Brown Christmas tree, you know, but they got lots of little tiny things, crystals and bells and stuff hanging on them that are all Christmas oriented and just really lovely things. But I think they'd be pretty done in any other set of colors that you liked, because it's a beautiful way to put things on display. Sometimes you'll see people do that, those old-fashioned, I should say not little, but they're old-fashioned trees that you were, they were some of the first plastic trees that you used for centerpieces, and they were always decorated with spice jellies. You know, they had candies on them, and they were so funny looking. But they're popular again now, but people are putting on natural things. They're adding them in terms of flowers and berries and even acorns and hollies and whatnot on these little tiny plastic centerpieces. It's just kind of fun to look at, something different to do, and something that you might want to consider doing. I've got a secret I'd like for you to spread. Guess what? If you are growing mustard, chard, turnips, any of the greens at all, including lettuces actually, get your scissors handy. No matter which one you're growing, you don't want to pull. And if you want to pull the whole plant up, that's one thing. If you're thinning it out so that you can let some others get bigger, that's different. But if you're just trying to harvest and get them to regrow, by all means, cut the leaves just above the growing point at the center. Don't cut through the center, but cut right above that growing point and give them a little fertilizer and off they'll go again. It restarts them. It gives them another little opportunity to start growing again. You may want to cover them if it's really cold where you are at this particular time, because that the effect of the sunlight coming through the plastic, clear plastic, will help to make them grow even faster to get your recutting done in a very few weeks. But you can cut greens and leaf lettuces and chards several times during the winter if you will just keep your scissors handy and use that instead of making it like it's a secret. A lot of people feel like they shouldn't tell you to do that. They'll tell you, be careful how you pinch that leaf. Okay, well, that's good. And if I tell you to get the scissors and just get real close there and do it, it's probably a little bit easier for you to do. I hope that there is somebody out there somewhere who appreciates as much as I do the fact that we've got a whole lot of time going here. Everybody talks. I've been hearing people talk about there being too little time between now and the Christmas day, because Christmas is in the middle of a week. There's plenty of time to do things, plenty of time to shop, plenty of time to, you know, get yourself in whatever mood it is that you like. Some people prefer to get everything done in a hurry, and then they just sit and wait and watch everybody else. I'm always jealous of them because I'm a last-minute person. No question.
I find comfort in that.
The last
the chaos
minute.
Part of it. Yeah. You know, and then you kind of tame it. It's almost, what is it, the Sinbad and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes,
craziness.
Yes.
And then they're friends at the end. You know. But, no, I do enjoy the... preparing is tough sometimes when gifts, you know, when you're trying to buy, you go, wow, I don't know
stuff.
If they want it.
Or, yeah, can't think
so
of stuff.
So you get at the last minute where you just have to pull the trigger. You just got to get,
yes,
all right, I'm gonna go buy this, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, I'm going to bring the package. It's going to be nice.
It's not like I don't want to do it early. It's just I'm confused at what I should get. And then I get to that point where your back's against the wall.
Exactly. The clock does keep ticking, yeah. And that can be part of the problem, that's for sure. There are always, today is, for example, Small Business Saturday. So we know lots and lots of people that would be very happy for you to come and take care of all of that shopping right now.
Yeah.
There are a lot of deals to be had because of that. But I love this. Orange slices and candles on them. This is from Ray and Clinton. Do you remember the little plastic centerpiece trees that had the spikes? Yes, exactly. And that they were either gumdrops on them, or they had orange slices, or they had different. But they were all. It was part of the I think wanting to bring things inside that were not organic. And there was a whole lot of that. That's how come we ended up with metal Christmas trees at one point. That people were enamored of. The space age, and they were enamored of everything that seemed modern in those years, and for that reason there were plastic wreaths before there were non-live Christmas trees. There were non-live wreaths and garlands that you, it's just interesting how we have gone through this whole thing. There always are people who want one, there always are people who want the other, and I say, why not have both? Enjoy the things that you can bring from your garden into the house, and why not also enjoy the ones that you just like the looks of? I saw a frosted pink Christmas tree this week. Made me think of my mother. She's the only person I ever knew that had a pink Christmas tree once. Hers was Hers was metal. They were the, you know, it was awful. But anyway.
Aluminum, probably, I mean, or something
was,
like that.
And I'm sure it would be worth a ton of money if anyone had kept it, because they're popular in some circles. But thank you. Appreciate Sue in Loosedale. She's listening. She thinks I'm funny, and I appreciate that. She says we're working on stuff, trying to get the daffodils in. Interestingly enough, there's no planting instructions. I think there's a reason for that. I think because nobody thinks you'll read them. I've been having this struggle realizing nobody reads anything. The instructions, for example, on planting bulbs in the Mississippi garden of any sort is never plant them more than twice as deep as they are tall. So if you have a number one size daffodil bulb, it's likely to be 2.5 inches tall. You're going to plant it 2 inches in the soil. Not you're not going to go 6 inches in deep, because you won't ever see it again. Mm-hmm. Our soils are too heavy. In places where the soils are loamy, in Ohio, you know, places like that, you plant things much deeper because you need them to get settled there and stay there. We don't have that. We need them to be able to get back out of the soil and put their flowers on. So we have a little bit different.
Loamy means denoting or relating to a fertile soil of clay and sand.
Mm-hmm. But trust me, it has more sand than mine does.
And then a sand containing hummus.
Yeah, that's
what
true.
What is that? Not the edible,
in Greek
restaurants.
No, that has two M's. Humus is an organic matter. Humus is an organic matter that is derived from other natural wood sources and natural earth sources. It is it's humic acid is usually what they're talking about that they've been able to refine out of it. It's just one of the components. And it's there was a long time, some of y'all are going to remember this, there was a guy that, I won't say the name of the product because it was good, but I don't know if it's still around or not, but he sold humic acid and called it humate at garden centers. And it was pretty good stuff, but it got real expensive. For a while it was not, and then it was like some of those other things with all the vitamins, you know, Super Thrive and all of those. Those were kind of throwaways back in the when, and they made a good impact in your work, but they were not an investment the way they are today. Well, we're going to piano out of here. My goodness, that is such a beautiful, beautiful picture. My goodness. Thank you, Sue, from Loosedale. That's where my grandmother was from. We'll be right back.
Harvested in June and July, Mississippi-grown sweet corn arrives just in time for your cookout or outdoor get-together. But you better be quick. Once Mississippi-grown sweet corn appears on your local farmers market shelves, it disappears just as fast. There are so many ways to cook and eat Mississippi-grown sweet corn, but of course our favorite is corn on the cob.
Sweet corn, just one of the many foods the Mississippi farmer grows for you, the farm families of Mississippi.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
Okay, I have.
You know, if he would turn the camera on himself during these little interludes, y'all would be amused and amazed.
They catch me every now and again.
Well, unfortunately, you're kind not to wake everybody up here with it. I appreciate that. But the good news is he's always just flirting. You know, there's a certain level of Cajun music that I cannot help but succumb to, and the Balfour Brothers are one of them. There's just nothing I love better.
Well, you gave me the music reins today, so I took them.
That's
and
right.
We had a wonderful call earlier today, and I wanted to state this at least twice today. Mississippian Colin Stout, it will be on the Grand Ole Opry tonight.
Uh-huh.
Mississippian, a great musician. I was looking at the schedule, trying to make sure if I could find exactly when that would be. I didn't see exact time, but it is tonight. Colin mm-hmm. Stout will be on there, and
fun.
So tune in. Yeah,
always worth watching that.
Yeah.
Literally, my grandmother's very, very favorite in the world.
Look, I think 7 p.m. is when it starts, but
yeah,
I mean, you don't know when.
It goes
when
on
yet.
For a while.
There'll
yeah.
be probably a handful of folks in there.
There's a beautiful, beautiful photograph of the Satsuma tree. Great question. My friend has this Satsuma tree, and I'd love to get one started from it at my house. What would be the best route? This is Scott. And dry some seeds or try to get a transplant. Or I'm in Tylertown, and the tree is in Picayune. Here's the answer. Root a cutting, because the seeds are not necessarily going to be true, and they take too long anyway. Be pretty, but you won't know for many years whether or not it's going to actually be the same Satsuma. Or go to Paul Bounds and get a tree. Paul Bounds in Bickian.
You said something about Loosedale a minute ago. You said your grandmother's from Loosedale?
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather had some roots in Loosedale.
Yep, they did.
It might be related and didn't even know
could,
it.
Could be. Could
not
be.
A big town. Beautiful
no.
place. I love South Mississippi.
Lovely, lovely. They were all from Loosedale. There were a whole bunch of them, and they were mm-hmm. from Loosedale.
Okay, well, we might be related.
Might be
just
related.
Didn't know that.
We could easily be. That's part of the joy of this part of the world. There's a lot of people here, but it's not that many. So,
yeah. Right.
And if your family's been here for generations like mine has, you know, then that's my mother's family was part of the family. We were known as the ones that crossed the river
mm-hmm.
because we were the
y'all
only ones that, we were the only ones that left Mississippi for work at that point in time. The rest of them found things to do here.
Yeah.
And he still worked for the same railroad, but they sent him to Arkansas.
Okay. So all over the state of Mississippi,
all
Louisiana, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I froze our picture here on this beautiful medley. It has Brussels sprouts. Is
yes.
that correct? It has,
mm-hmm.
has carrots in there.
And sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes.
And onion.
Wow. And what did you do to prep that?
Well,
is it all
actually,
steamed or is it?
No, it's all... It's all slightly roasted by itself with oil and salt and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
individual vegetables, and then they're all put together and re-seasoned. With thyme oil and pepper.
Yeah. See, that's the color I'm talking about.
Well, that's where I was. I also roasted whatnot the green beans, but they didn't look as pretty, so I put them separately.
Yeah, and don't ever put okra in an air fryer. That's...
This sounds like words of wisdom.
Yeah,
I don't know
yeah,
about
if you're
this.
Thinking of doing like, hey, I want to see if you can air fry okra, you know, just no, don't
even. No.
Yeah, it turns into, no, it's like... I don't know what it turns. It's like rope.
Goodness.
You could make twine out of
the. Well, the air fryer is a pretty amazing thing.
It is. It just does. I mean, to fry like the little ones, you know, with fried batter
yes,
and
that's
stuff.
That's different.
Don't
yeah,
try to like
different.
You know.
Don't try
dehydrate
to start with
it.
The
yeah.
okra. Yeah, don't do start that. With the okra. Oh my
save
goodness.
Some trouble.
Well, I now have a recipe for okra stew that is a Texas dish that I did not actually know about. I'm sure I've probably eaten it somewhere along the way, but didn't realize what all it was. But it's another way to cook shrimp and chicken and all those sorts of things. It's kind of a gumbo, but not quite. It's more okra-centric. I like that. I think I could enjoy that. I'm going to work on it. Let you know how it goes. How did I forget this? The word of the day, y'all. And then we have just been here in the midst of the word of the day. The word of the day is footle. Mm-hmm. It's a verb.
A foothold, huh?
Nope.
No?
Nope. F-O-O-T-L-E. It means to talk or act foolishly. So we're practicing our footling today, and we encourage you to do some of that, too.
Yeah, to engage in fruitless activity.
Exactly. And that's, guess what? That's not a waste of time, always. You literally, I mean, let's face it, we're not going to make any great progress if we're dancing, but we're going to enjoy it, and it's going to be footling. So why not? How big does a Chinese pistachio tree get at maturity? It's not the biggest tree in the bunch. If you look at the ones that, for instance, are in my neighborhood as street trees, they're planted in the sidewalk, they're probably no more than 18 feet, but they can get taller than that. And if they have room to spread, they will get about about as wide. They're beautiful trees, lovely fall color. If you haven't appreciated Chinese pistache, please do, because they're one of those things that you may not think about. And you see it and you go, oh, that's pretty. What in the world? But it's a little bit different, and it has a little bit, it has a nice profile, but it also has a really nice leaf shape that looks more delicate than it is. And that's why they hold on through this weather, and then eventually they do drop off. But it's like ginkgos. I was looking at ginkgo trees this week. Oh, so pretty. There's some, though, because weather has been so odd, they're absolutely green and yellow at the same time. Now, you know, ginkgos are famous.
Yeah, for that
they turn
moment,
yellow
they
and then bang. Yeah. And all those leaves drop off. But this week, there are both green and yellows. And I'm interested to see. I'm going to go drive by the same one again after a couple of nights that are cold enough to turn those things yellow and drop them all off. That's the sort of nature that people look at and appreciate. And we who grow things, we who garden, we who work in the landscape really do appreciate them more than other people. For other people, they're absolutely magic and they might notice. For us, we're waiting for it every year. It's like the people up north, they wait for those first crocus to come out of the snow in February sometime. Well, our crocus will bloom too, but we don't have to look through the snow usually to get to see them.
Always love that moment in Oxford, being there for 21 years. Was the moment the ginkgos turned yellow, and they just went bling
bang. And it's so dramatic, and they are one of the plants that, you know, because they're named for the shape of their leaf. Ginkgo means duck foot, and that's the shape of that little leaf, and it is an absolutely beautiful sight, dusting all over the lawn or dusting all over where, you know, even the sidewalk, you know, wherever the leaves fall. It's just beautiful because the color is so rich.
How many years can you get out of a tree like that, you know, they start, you know?
Ginkgos have been around since before the dinosaurs, so they're
protected there. I mean,
once they were recovered and brought into the trade, they're a very long-lived tree.
Well, and they do a great job in Oxford of protecting those trees. Mm-hmm. They're not ones you can cut down. I think it would take an act of Congress up there to get rid of a ginkgo.
And that's wise, because they're a venerable tree. Another one I think of in that category is dawn redwood. We did not see them. We might have seen a few, but we didn't recognize them as our version of those beautiful big redwood trees, because they were not common. And now that they're a little bit more easy to get into the landscape, I think people are appreciating them in that same way. We used to think that bald cypress was about as grand as it gets, and it's a magnificent tree. Still my favorite, of course, because I grew up with it. But dawn redwood is a beautiful conifer to have in a landscape where you have the room for it. I think that it's a beautiful choice, and a lot more people are making that one.
It seems like, you know, with the cypress, it's almost like you need the scream of the crawdads and the locusts and the wildlife to make it feel, there's something that goes along with that.
You probably don't think it's really too terrible that they make the knees that then tear up your landscape.
I love them where they're supposed to be, you know, in the swamp. Yeah. Trying to mow a yard, that's a rough one.
Yeah, I will tell you the stories about lamps made out of cypress knees another day. Thank you so much, Lance. Thanks to y'all for being here. Appreciate everybody. We'll be here next week for the Garden Mama Show.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of Super Talk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Please do not use gas appliances for purposes for which they are not intended. A gas oven should never be used for heating purposes. Never store flammable materials inside. The Mississippi Propane Gas Association takes pride in keeping your home or business protected. We ensure that our products are delivered in compliance with the highest industry safety standards to safeguard your family, your property, and the environment. Our dealers participate in the industry's best practices for propane usage and promote consumer safety education. Visit mspropane.com. Energy for everyone. Propane.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. But what if the online information about your business is incorrect, or even worse, not very flattering? If your online presence isn't great, you may be losing customers. SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's trusted and highly trained team is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today. A SuperTalk Mississippi Media Production.